A bicycle crash is not an accident. And when you find yourself in a situation that calls for experienced, effective, and positive legal support and advocacy, you can depend on any of North America's independent bike law members. Bike Law's cycling attorneys are members of our community committed to the pursuit of cycling safety and justice. For more information about Bike Law, log on to bikelaw.com. They're on your left, protecting your rights.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show is heard every Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m. in Northeastern Ohio on WJCU 88.7 FM and streamed at WJCU.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for February 8th, 2020. First up is WJCU's 2020 Radiothon. Beginning next Friday night, February 14th, and running through Sunday night, February 23rd, it's the one and only time each year we come to you, our listeners, for support for the radio station that hosts The Outspoken Cyclist and so many other great shows, and helps to make us the number one college station in Northeast Ohio. All of the money that's pledged during Radiothon goes directly to support the station. In the past, we've used Radiothon money to upgrade our air studio, we've installed new and more modern computers and phones, and we actually built a real lobby so that in-studio guests could sit down. It's a worthy cause, and any amount you wish to donate will be most appreciated. Beginning next Friday night, February 14th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, you can log on to WJCU.org and go directly to the Radiothon online form. So mark your calendar next Friday night, February 14th, and show us some love. Now let's talk about this week's show. On March 20th, the 16th annual North American Handmade Bicycle Show opens in Dallas, Texas at the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center. Today, I speak with the founder of the show, Don Walker, to unpack all the details, including a brand new event being held in conjunction with the show. Then, Aaron Weiss joins me from, wait for it, Hanoi, Vietnam. He's going to talk about his long-time idea of a special backpack for professional bicycle commuters. I love saying that. Aaron, who's retired from the U.S. Marine Corps at the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, began his career in Washington, D.C., where he found that his uniform, after his five-mile commute to the Pentagon, wouldn't be up to snuff in the packs he found for his bike. Since then, he's been working on the idea, and when his wife was assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Hanoi, Aaron retired and began his R&D in earnest. This week, his Kickstarter campaign was fully funded, and his shellback bike pack will become a reality. Finally, we take a journey to New Hampshire, where longtime cross-country rider and owner of America by Bicycle, Doug Terosian, lives and works. America by Bicycle is one of the most respected organizations that has fulfilled thousands of riders' dreams of making that cross-country trip. Doug will fill us in on how America by Bicycle began and why their trips are so compelling. We'll punch up Radiothon one more time today, and we will get the answers to last week's Facebook question later on in the show. So off to the offices of Don Walker Cycles to chat about the North American Handmade Bicycle Show coming up next month. Hello, Don Walker. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. NABS 2020 is soon. How are you?
Headless chicken mode there, Diane. How's it going?
It's going well. So I've been going through the current exhibitor list, I'm finding some great companies to chat with who are going to be exhibiting with you, trying to lead up to the show a little bit. But let's begin with where you chose for 2020 and when the dates are, and then we'll dive in a little bit.
Sure, sure. We chose Dallas, Texas for the 2020 show, and the dates are March 20th through the 22nd.
That's simple enough. Isn't there going to be an event in conjunction with NABS this year?
Well, truth be told, yeah. I'm just trying to add more features to the show in itself. It took us a while to get it going, but we found a wonderful promoter there in Texas, Kevin Lee of Spinistry, and he is going to be hosting the International Grand Prix of Gravel there in Dallas, right along the Trinity River Greenway, which is maybe 3/4 of a mile from the convention center. And so we're fortunate enough that the folks there in Dallas gave us a permit to hold the race. And we're really excited that, Spinistry and Kevin are bringing this event that's in conjunction with Dallas, or the Dallas show. And it'll be Saturday morning. First race goes off at 7:45.
I'm speaking with Dom Walker. We're talking about NABS 2020 coming up next month in Dallas. This new Grand Prix of gravel racing is going to be coming along with it, which is very, very cool. What else is going to be happening this year before we dive into some of your exhibitors? Will there be seminars at the show this year?
Absolutely. One of the things that we've been doing is the last few years, we've been focusing on women in the industry. And we've had some really good, I like to call it a symposium, because it's not just a regular seminar. It doesn't last for, 45 minutes with 15 minutes of Q&A. They've been going longer, having more in-depth, and we're trying to encourage women to come into the cycling industry. We're trying to, be all-inclusive and having, wonderful discussions and panel members and stuff like that. And if this year we've got Lori Barrett of Rotor Components, who's kind of going to be, headlining the seminar. She's going to be working on getting some really good panelists and stuff like that. So we're super grateful to her for helping us out and, using her extensive, Rolodex of names that she could bring to help us out.
Good.
We typically have other, new product seminars from manufacturers, and we'll have a celebrity or two pop by and say stuff. The usual suspects from the past few years.
Sure, sure. You do have some newer exhibitors this year. You have some standbys who have been with you a long time. This is year number 16. Who would have thought that, huh, Don?
Certainly not me. I joke around quite a bit when I say that, this is the longest job I've ever held. But yeah, 16 years is a long time to be putting on shows. And, each year I'm trying to evolve the show more and more and making it, more fun for the attendees, more fun for the exhibitors. One of the things we did last year in Sacramento, we had a video interviews that were going on. We were trying to get them streaming, but we'll have people interviewing the builders and other all the other exhibitors to fit in there as schedule allows. And we're just really excited about making content so that they can put that on their own websites and social media and stuff like that. And
once again, I'm speaking with Don Walker. He is the founder and papa of the North American Handmade Bike Show next month in March. It's pretty interesting to me how it's become this sort of seminal show. People look to it to see what's new in hand building, and other small shows have popped up kind of around the concept regionally. But, yours is the founding show of this whole movie. I mean, you've actually changed the way people think about handmade bicycles, even though you are the person who hand makes bicycles also. It's a juried show, which is interesting. Not all shows are juried. Have you changed any of the categories? Isn't there a campy category? And there's all kinds of stuff.
Well, yeah, the Campy category is a sponsored award, and that is they have a jury that they have chosen to come, you know, look at all the bikes that are displayed with Campagnolo, and they will win an award with Campagnolo. And I believe they have three or four winners, so it's like a first place, then a second place, third place, then not like an honorable mention.
I think. Nice.
You know, we love having sponsors give awards because it shows their commitment to, you know, honoring the craft of frame building, and thrilled that they want to sponsor the show and be a part of what, you know, we have going on. But as far as the actual NABS awards, I know that we have a great panel of judges this year. Joining us again is Tom Kellogg, who is one of the preeminent frame builders in the United States, who just actually is retiring. You know, they took their final order, I believe in August of last year.
Right.
And Tom's been at it for over 40 years. He and his partner, Jeff, do Spectrum bicycles. And, you know, as a, you know, as a builder and as a colleague and as a friend, he is one of the, you know, most genuine, nicest people on the planet. And I adore him, you know, just as a person. And I can't thank him enough for being a part of our judging panel.
That's awesome.
Secondly, we've got Wes Williams of Willits Bicycles, who's been a builder for, 30-some-odd years, I believe. He's based in Austin, and he's still, you know, building some bikes. I think now he's kind of doing some cargo trikes or some rickshaw-type bicycles.
Oh, that's interesting.
Pretty cool stuff. And he's, you know, a well-respected, you know, builder in his own right. And then I guess the low man on the totem pole, but, you know, certainly not, you know, being derogatory when I say that, is Glenn Thompson, and who's a local Dallas guy that had just actually retired from building. He'd been building, I think, about 15 years, and he had the brand Daltex. And Glenn, you know, certainly has given us a lot of information about the local markets and everything. And, you know, he strongly believes that we are going to have a wonderful turnout there in Dallas for the show. Those are our judges. I'm thrilled to be working with nothing but frame builders this year. And we will have a well run judging paddock. And we've also got a on staff guy, Russ Meyer, who's our webmaster, but he also is like the guy that is running the awards for NABS. If you see those guys walking around the show, you know, pat them on the back,
right?
Shake their hand, you know, buy them a beer, whatever. They you know, worked hard to make, you know, sure the judging goes off, you know, without any issues. So,
well, I always like to know what Don Walker's bringing to the show. You have anything new this year? What are you bringing? What are you preparing to show us?
I've got a couple of bikes that, you know, are at paint right now, and one that's getting ready to go and one that is getting ready to be constructed. And yeah, you know, there's nothing like, you know, waiting until the last minute for me, but it happens every year despite all the best intentions of, oh, my show bikes are going to be done by November. And then it's like, oh, you know, boy, I just don't have the time in November to do this. And yeah, what I'm bringing is I'm bringing a few track bikes, which is really my passion. I just love, you know, track racing. I absolutely love track bikes. I'm bringing what I'm calling a gravel com, and that's a bike that I'm making for a buddy of mine who is commuting to work and wanting to race gravel at the same time. Well, not exactly at the same moment, but he'll be using the bike to commute to work, so it'll have brazons for a rack. And then, you know, he'll have the ability to, you know, take it on, you know, long adventure weekends.
Nice.
Probably bringing an oldie, but a goodie. I think I'm going to bring the Stayer back out.
Oh, nice.
It's always a fun bike, and it always gathers a crowd and is always good for conversation starters, shall we?
The last thing I want to talk about is this opportunity you're giving to bike shops, which I think it's relatively new. Did you do that last year?
Yeah, we did that in Sacramento, and it was a situation where, you know, we've got a lot of builders that actually have retail accounts, and we want to encourage more retailers to feature handmade bikes in their lineup at their shop. So we figured, you know, we can offer, you know, to either the owner, manager, or the buyer for any shop in the country, come on out, but register with us first. We can register you online, but when you show up, bring an ID and bring your business card, and we'll give you an entry free for the weekend. And you can come in, and if you like what you see with one of the builders, sign an agreement, help them, you know, build more bikes, and, you know, and hopefully, you know, offering a handmade bike in your shop will bring you more customers.
Well, what's interesting about your offer is that they can come before the show opens to the general public so that they can actually have a one-on-one conversation without, you know, the tumult of all the attendees sort of descending on the builder. So that's really nice.
Absolutely. They get to come in the same time as the media on Friday morning and Saturday morning. They get to come in an hour early. We're trying to facilitate the sale of more handmade bikes, and, you know, what's good for, you know, the builders and good for the retailers is a, you know, it's a win-win situation for everybody. And, you know, we hope it'll be a program that, you know, we can continue doing in the future.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And of course, the big announcement is always on the last day, where the show's going next year. I won't ask. I never ask. I always wonder. So I'm just going to just wait and see. I'll do the wait and see. Tell my listeners how they can find out more and get tickets.
Well, you know, I actually wanted to talk about next year's show because, you know, I was thinking Wuhan, China might be a welcome addition to our rotation. Obviously,
you're
the
funny.
Sarcasm there, but
a little.
You know, every year people ask me, "Where's it going?" And I make stuff up. It's like, "Oh, Kalamazoo, Michigan." Or I did this one year. I had the floor plan of the next year's show. The decorator, I said, "You know, this is a joke. Help me out here. Just put, you know, Waikiki Convention Center, you know, in the floor plan." You know, then I left the floor plan out and I saw people picking it up and I'm looking around like I lost it and I go grab it from them and they're all talking about how the show is going to Waikiki next year. And, you know, I love just having fun with some of the people. And,
yeah, yanking their chains, Don. Come on.
Gary Prangy from Screen Specialty Shop. He saw the floor plan. He came up and actually kissed me on the lip.
Do you not know a joke when you see it, right?
Yeah,
right.
Well, you know, I look forward to seeing him every year because, you know, he gives me NABS branded beers.
Ooh, that's awesome.
I've probably got the greatest collection of NABS branded beers, still all unopened on my mantle.
All right, let's let them know how to find out more.
Oh, sure. NAHBS.com. Or you could Google North American Handmade Bicycle Show 2020, and that should get you right to us. And, you know, we look forward to seeing you there. So come on out, bring the kids, bring the family. You'll have a great time. You'll get to see some of the most beautiful bikes on planet Earth.
I agree. Don Walker, the founder and director of the North American Handmade Bike Show, Dallas, Texas, March 20th through 22nd. I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me, as always, and I look forward to seeing you.
Oh, Diane, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the support you've given the show throughout the years. People like you are an invaluable asset to what we do and, you know, making our community better. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Take care, Don. We'll talk again.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Don Walker joined me to talk about NABS. It opens in Dallas on March 20th at the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center. If you're interested in attending or want to see who's exhibiting, you can log on to nahbs.com. Let's take a short break, and when we return, we'll speak with Aaron Weiss. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
I'm Diane Jenks, and you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. The miracle of technology and some careful planning made the next guest sound like he was sitting across from me instead of being halfway around the world. Aaron Weiss and his family live in Hanoi, Vietnam. His wife is a diplomat. His kids attend school there. And Aaron is fulfilling a longtime dream of making a backpack for cycling commuters who need to show up at work impeccably attired. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today, all the way from Hanoi, Vietnam.
Diane, it is great to be on your show. Thank you for the very warm welcome.
Well, it sounds like you're like sitting right across from me. That's so cool. Technology is so interesting, isn't it?
It's really incredible. It also has been great for entrepreneurs, and you know, some of the things that startups are doing, we just couldn't do by ourselves, you know, even 10 years ago. So technology's been really great for, you know, startups and new types of thinking and technology.
You're absolutely right. So we're going to talk about your product, the Shellback Backpack, but I think you have a really unique story. And I'd like to know why you designed the pack, but would you give us a little backstory on who you are and what you do, what you've been doing for the past, I don't know how many years, and why you're in Hanoi?
I'd be happy to. So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Wisconsin. And after college, I joined the Marine Corps and served in the Marine Corps for 25 years. It was a wonderful time and great opportunity to serve my country and also work with some incredible people. I retired about 2.5 years ago because my wife is a diplomat, and two careers traveling overseas don't really work so well. So I retired and opted to support her career, and that's going great as a result. So she was posted in Oman. She was posted in Riyadh, and then she got posted to Vietnam. And I, you know, left the Marine Corps and took a defense contracting job. And then when we finally moved to Hanoi, you know, I moved here so I could be with the family, of course. I just didn't want to do defense contracting. It just wasn't any fun. Again, great people, good mission, but it wasn't any fun. So I had the opportunity to start my own company. And this is something I'd been talking about for a long time, which was to build backpacks for bike to work commuters. And I'm in Hanoi now because my wife is here. She works at the embassy, and I'm here supporting her. And that's how we got started in Hanoi.
So you have children?
We do. We have four kids, and they all live with us here in Hanoi, and they go to school here. And as a matter of fact, they're not at school now because of the coronavirus. So they've canceled all the schools across Vietnam as a result. So you might actually hear them in the background.
No, you know, I don't actually, I don't know what they're up to, but maybe they're too quiet. I don't really know. But anyway, let's talk about the Shellback Backpack. And this actually is an idea you had while you were still in the Marine Corps. Tell us about your commuting years and then how you came up with this backpack idea.
In the late 90s, I got posted to the Pentagon, and I lived in Washington, D.C., and so the distance was about 5 miles, which, you know, is almost perfect for a bike commute. And I attempted to do it a couple of times, but I couldn't find the appropriate backpack that would transport my uniform from my house to the locker room at the Pentagon. And I looked around and I couldn't find anything. And so I did what a lot of people do, which is pre-stage my, you know, my work attire at the office on the weekends. And, or, you know, most of the time I just didn't bike. That's kind of what happens. So over the years, I, you know, moved from different duty stations to duty stations and would try and bike to work on occasion. But again, the limiting factor was some sort of pack that would allow me to take my one day work attire into the office and back again. And it just didn't exist. So I designed something while I was in Iraq and have been thinking about it and noodling over it ever since. And when I got to Hanoi, it seemed like the right time and the right opportunity to try and turn that vision, that idea into reality.
Let me tell our listeners, we're speaking with Aaron Weiss. He is the entrepreneur, retired from the Marine Corps, Shellback Backpack. It's a really interesting looking pack. You can see it online. We'll give you the URL before we're done with our conversation. So I know it has a little turtle on the back, and I assume that's how you came up with Shellback, or did Shellback come up first and then the turtle representing that idea?
So Shellback is, yes, it is in reference to our logo. We have a pretty fun logo of a turtle on a bicycle. As we were designing the pack and thinking about names, the turtle reference kept coming back, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, we want to choose a name that connotes safety and steady progress. And also, most importantly, it's a protective layer between what's important on the inside and the elements and the dangers on the outside. So it's a protective shell for everything on the inside, as well as demonstrating a deliberate planning process, a deliberate way of thinking about the backpack. And lastly, this is kind of a maritime term. Shellback is a term that Marines and sailors use when they cross the equator. So you kind of transition from an inexperienced newbie to an experienced old salt and you become a shellback. Hmm. And that also is kind of the message we want to say as well. You know, this is for serious bike commuters and people who want to organize their clothes and all their accessories. It's what you would use for advanced bike to work commuting. So all of those things kind of were swirling around, and we settled on the name, and we think it's really appropriate for the mission of the backpack.
So you say it is a bike to work for professionals backpack. You talk about it being simple, organized, and protective. So tell us some of the features that make it different from other commuting. You know, there have been commuting briefcases that hang off of a rack, and there have been commuting sort of panniers. There have been other bags, but this one is pretty self-contained. And of course, I will ask you eventually how much it weighs. But what are some of the features of your Shellback backpack?
Well, the most prominent feature, Diane, is probably the trifold garment system. Now, the whole pack is designed around this system, and that is to take a suit from your closet, put it in a backpack, ride to work, unpack it, clean up, and get into a pressed work in your pressed work attire very simply. And to do that, I designed a specially designed hanger that allows you to essentially take your suit from the closet, fold it into your backpack, pack your other accessories, and be on your way. And the key to this is that it keeps your suit or your professional attire crease free. And that's the most important feature. You have to get your work attire to the office. The other thing is that a lot of the backpacks out there are great backpacks, but they're not great backpacks for biking. When you are on your handlebars and leaning forward, you know, it creates a lot of sweat. And so what we designed was what we call the Air Max ventilated back panel system. And it's an external frame in which a ventilated mesh is on it. So it creates airflow between the rider and the backpack above it. And that really reduces the perspiration on the rider. The third thing is that we've designed a bunch of external pockets to include what we're calling the shoe well. And that's where you put your shoes. The last thing you want to do is put smelly or possibly dirty shoes in the same compartment as your suit. That just doesn't make any sense. So we've pulled that completely out of the backpack and put it on the outside. So it's easy to access and easy to clean, and it keeps everything separated. A fourth feature is that we've made it safe. We've added this highly reflective glass bead fabric that makes the biker really visible, you know, to vehicles, in low light conditions. So safety is of course a huge deal in biking to work. And we've added this really great technology to make the backpack a lot more easier to see. And the last thing is, I think we've added a lot of things to the front of the backpack. So you can access a lot of your stuff while the backpack is still on your back. You don't have to pull it off your back and open it up and dig through stuff. We've got a phone pouch. We've got number of pockets. We've got some connectors on the straps that allow you to change components and accessories, you know, a phone case or even a sunglasses case. It's all right there in the front. So you can actually grab things while you're on the move with one hand and, you know, show an ID or pull your wallet out or do what you need to do without, you know, pulling the pack off your back and stopping. So those, I think, are some of our main features that distinguish us from other backpacks or panniers or stuff like that.
Well, you answered my question about the shoes, so I won't ask that. But one question that isn't answered, and so let me go back to the glass beading for a second, because for a while, I think it was Velocity was making a rim that I think was glass beaded, and so when the light hit it, it just lit up. And I imagine that's a similar feature of the fabric then?
So, Diane, I don't know about the Velocity rim, so I can't necessarily compare them, but okay. I will tell you that the unit of measure for reflectivity is called candela, right? So one candela is, you know, a fairly low amount of reflectivity. And 330 candelas is the OSHA standard for vests on construction workers that are working on the road.
Okay.
So those orange vests are at 330. The fabric we've got on our backpack is 420 candelas.
Okay,
so,
then.
You know, when a car light shines upon this or any type of light shines on, you get a really massive reflection. And we've placed it on the pack in such a way that when you're riding, it's hugely reflective. And when you're walking around standing straight up, you don't really see it. So we think it's pretty cleverly designed to be very safe while riding and then very subtle when you're just walking around the office with it.
Is the pack waterproof or water repellent?
So the pack is water resistant. So you know, there's a lot of stitching in there. You know, even the zippers, you know, that's stitching that penetrates the fabric. So it's water resistant. It's polyurethane treated on both sides. So it's very water resistant, but I will not make the claim to waterproof. So what that really means is if you're like in a light drizzle or maybe heavy fog or even snow, the pack is going to protect your stuff inside. But if you're in a dedicated downpour, if you're in, say, a Hanoi thunderstorm or a Seattle downpour, you're going to need the waterproof pouch that we've included in the pack. It's at the bottom. All you need to do is pull it out, and it's got elastic in it, and it pops right on. So regardless of the amount of water that's coming out of the sky, it will protect your pack. You have the option of putting the pack on, or I'm sorry, the rain cover on or not. Then the rain cover's standard is included in every pack.
Let me remind our listeners once again, we're speaking with Aaron Weiss. He is in Hanoi, Vietnam. He has designed a new backpack for professional bike commuters, which is such a cool idea just to begin with, to say that a professional bike commuter. I like that. So let's talk about a couple other things. There's a Kickstarter campaign that is about 2 seconds away tonight when we are speaking of being funded. I just looked before we went on this conversation and literally it's less than $400 away from fully funded. I assume it will get there by Saturday, not a problem. But tell people how they can find out more about it. And then we'll talk about when it'll be shipped and some of the other little tiny features like what colors does it come in? I mean, what's more important to me than the color, right?
You know, if it's okay, I'll start with color. Because
okay. You can do whatever you want. It's your conversation.
Well, Diane, thank you. But it's color is huge. And you have to have something that you enjoy having on your back. It has to look cool. I mean, you can have a functional backpack that looks like a 1980s Volvo and no one wants to wear that. It has to look cool. So we've put a bunch of time and effort into the colors and you know, we've got pretty standard black, blue, red and mocha colors, but we think the colors are great and it'll appeal to a pretty large cross section of the biker community. We've given them some clever names too. Having a backpack that is functional and looks good is incredibly important. I think we've done a pretty good job. The Kickstarter campaign is going great. As you mentioned, you know, we're just a couple hundred dollars away from being fully funded. And we're very excited about that. It's, if you go to Kickstarter, you can find it under Bike to Work Backpack. It's the first thing that pops up. We're calling this a first of its kind product because we really can't find anything else on the market that is strictly focused on people who bike to work and is designed by bikers for bikers and is thought of all the things that bikers need. So Bike to Work Backpack on Kickstarter is how you can find it. And if you want even more information, if you want to know more about the details of the fabrics and some of the glass bead technology that we've included, you can go to our website, which is Grunstrasse.com. That's the name of our company, the Grunstrasse Backpack Company, that has a lot more information, a lot more pictures as well.
So when will you start actually producing and shipping them?
The neat thing of living in Hanoi is that the factory is about 30 minutes from my house.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's fantastic. So I have a personal relationship with the factory owner, and I know a lot of the workers. So I intend to be there during a lot of the production. So we just talked earlier this week about when we could start, and we believe that we can start production at the beginning of March. It will take 4 to 6 weeks to make the backpacks that have been ordered on Kickstarter. They will be shipped in April, and they should arrive in time for Bike to Work Month.
That's awesome. Good timing. Good thinking. The last thing I want to ask you about is what other, since you're now a maker, that's that new term, what else have you got up your sleeve for the future?
Well, we've got a lot of neat ideas. A lot of people have contacted me after seeing the Kickstarter campaign and said they would like to develop a backpack for their specific niche and their specific need. And one of the ideas that I think is really appealing is a backpack for kids going to school. Most people have backpacks that, of course, can take a laptop. But actually, my son uses one of our prototypes to use as his school bag, and he puts his gym clothes in the shoe well, and he puts his laptop in the laptop department, of course, and he uses the rest for pens and all his other stuff in the school day. And I think a simplified version would be great for school. And so we think, you know, a dedicated school bag that could take your gym clothes and all your other stuff to school would might be really neat. I think if we you know, simplified it and made it a little more affordable, that could be really helpful and something that would protect laptops. I don't know if, you know, most kids, when they come home, they kind of toss their laptop in the corner or their backpack in the corner, and that doesn't always work well for if you have a laptop inside.
For the electronics inside, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Aaron, this has just been delightful. I really appreciate, I know it's really early in the morning for you guys. What is it, like 8:30 in the morning?
It's actually 9:30.
And it's 9:30 here,
perfect.
Too. Yeah, it's 9:30 here, but the difference is it's nighttime. The night before. So you're already into tomorrow. Thank you so much for talking with me. We will post all of this information on our Facebook page. And I wish you so much luck with your campaign. It looks like it's going to happen. And it sounds like a wonderful idea. And I appreciate you talking with me about it.
Diane, it's been really great to get to know you and talk to you as well. And I wish you huge success on your podcast and your radio program. That's just wonderful for you. I'm a huge public radio listener, so congratulations.
Thank you. All right.
All right.
Well, take care.
Have a wonderful evening.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Aaron Weiss joined me from his home in Hanoi. If you're interested in finding out more about his shell back bike pack, you can log on to his website, Grunestrasse.com. That's Grunestrasse. By the way, Grunestrasse means green street in German. So let's take another short break, and when we come back, we'll chat with Doug Tarosian, founder of America by Bicycle. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We're back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. Doug Tarosian and his dad did their first cross-country trip many years ago. And that led to another trip. And that led to another trip. And then it occurred to them that others wanted to do the same thing. Ride cross-country, have great support, stay in nice places, eat good food, meet great people, and ride long distances every day. Enter America by bicycle. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest this week.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've known about America by bicycle for a very long time. I cannot believe we've never connected before. And I think so many people dream of taking a cross-country bike tour. And you, on the other hand, made that dream come true for thousands of people. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into bike touring production.
Gosh, a little complicated. You know, I've always been a cyclist from a young man and grew up on a farm in Massachusetts. Bicycle was sort of my vehicle to be able to kind of get away from kind of that life at home and go explore. And in the late 70s, early 80s, I actually got my dad interested in cycling. So we started to do some cycling together, and we would progressively go out and do longer rides. And we started to really get interested in the long distance side. We started to do some, you know, some short goals, like ride across the state of Massachusetts. And then it was ride around New England. And we began to, you know, research a little bit and found out about the group, the Adventure Cycling Group that, you know, did maps. And it was Bike Centennial back in 76. Now they're Adventure Cyclists. And they had maps and discovered that there were a lot of cyclists that had this dream of riding cross country. And that sort of, you know, set the mindset of us thinking about it. And, we did our first crossing in 1982, went out to San Francisco, self-contained, not a lot of weight, started in San Francisco, rode down to LA, and then came across, finished here, just north of Boston, to finish our first cross country. Did it in 26 days. We did over 100 miles, closer to 120 a day. So we kind of like to stretch out our legs and go. And that really began the love affair with cycling for me. And then I went off to college and my dad got involved in some advocacy work. Ultimately, he became the president of the League of American Wheelmen. The National Cycling Foundation started in 1880. In back when they were started, their goal was to lobby the federal government to spend some money and actually pave roads for cycling. And it's kind of funny. Then the automobile came along and we sort of lost a little bit of that access, but we did get paved roads. But in the late 80s, as he was president, I guess like any organization, funding is low. And you have all these great ideas, so, you know, do these wonderful projects, some education, some advocacy projects, do a little lobbying again for more money to be spent out of the federal budget for bicycle pedestrian issues. So I'm trying to think, it was the summer I think 87 that we sat down and talked about, we love to ride cross country. Let's host a few events. And we started a foundation, and it was called the Bell Foundation, the Bicyclist Education and Legal Foundation. We set up a cross-country ride. We did LA to Boston, and then we did an East Coast ride from Portland, Maine to Orlando, Florida. So we hosted two events a year. You could come both, you could come one, and the goal was raise some money, pick a favorite charity, and once the event's done, half the money goes to your favorite charity, half of it comes back to the National Cycling Foundation for bike education and safety programs. And we ran that from 88 to 94. Fundraising, raised a lot of money, both for a wealth of charities and indeed for cycling. And indeed, some of the programs that were set up through the League of American Wheelmen are still active today. A lot of the education programs, and certainly their big focus these days is lobbying and getting money spent, again, out of the Fed highway budget for bicycle pedestrian issues. And gosh, in the last, you know, 30, 40 years, there's been a lot of progress in those areas, certainly in some of the big cities and some of the rail trails that have really taken over a lot of the community. So it's nice to see those things continuing and more people having, you know, safer places, roads, trails, et cetera, to ride on. It's a wonderful thing. After running the foundation for a number of years, and you know how fundraising works, Your goal is to raise the maximum amount of money for
the charities. So we would host a wonderful event, but I thought, wouldn't it be nice to spend a little more money on the event? And the event was we stayed in motels. We didn't camp. We provide meals. Obviously a wonderful route. So you have a nice route every day to ride. We brought, little vans. So we had sag stops set up throughout the day. We had a bike shop mechanic. So we had good mechanical support. We carried your luggage. So, you know, we tried to do all the logistics. So as the rider and the cyclist with the goal of riding cross country, you could just ride every day and have a nice time, a good experience, your pace. And you knew you were on a good route. You knew there was sag stops every, 25, 35 miles set up for you. You stayed in a hotel, which was really luxurious versus sleeping in a tent. They're not, five-star hotels, but business class type, so reasonable accommodations. You can get a nice shower and have a soft bed and full support. And that's ultimately was the impetus to start America by Bicycle, was to spend a little more money on the event, and let's do a nice event that's, I stopped short of calling it luxurious, but very good quality with again, all the logistics and support that if you were planning it yourself, you would probably try to put that together, that kind of support and service. So we do that legwork for you. And then we're obviously a reference on the phone or email. If you have questions, we put training programs together and things like that. So, again, as the cyclist, you come out and that's your adventure, is to ride across the country, and, you do it with a group of people. So you're not alone. And that camaraderie is a wonderful part of it as well. Our groups are wonderful people. You can imagine after a few days, the first week, everybody gets to know each other. It becomes a little community in itself, and lots of friendships and things are formed. And that camaraderie can really help, particularly on maybe a tough day or a weather day that, hey, we're all in it together. We're going to get there. Having other people out there as well is very motivating and very enjoyable. And it's interesting because over the years, people have with the goal of riding cross country, you don't think about the group that you're going with until you meet them. And then you find out that's such a wonderful part of the experience as well. So I guess back to the old adage that it's not the destination, but the journey seems to hold true.
Very true. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Doug Tarosian. He is the founder of America by Bicycle. I knew that last name from somewhere. So I knew about your dad, and I certainly knew about the League of American Wheelmen. I mean, I've been in the bike business for over 40 years, so it's an interesting connection. I'm glad to have made it. So you've already given us a lot of information about how America by Bicycle works. Let's break down a few other things. I looked at the website, and it's not just one cross-country event that you are offering. You're offering many, many, many cross-country events. Tell us how that works and how somebody might choose the right event, and then who supports each of these different events.
Well, with America by Bicycle, we've been around, 2020 is our 26th year. So we've been doing this for a number of years. In the beginning years, the goal was really to focus on cross-country. And that was, our initial love of cycling was to provide an event. I hate to call it generic. We didn't want to be too many miles a day or too few. We average about 80 miles a day, take a day off about every week. So a pace that's reasonable and with appropriate training, every cyclist can come and do it. But our country is so big, we began to think that we should provide other opportunities. So every other year, in the early years, we added another event. So we have a number of cross countries. Again, that 80 mile a day pace, I call that the touring pace. So we began to offer lots of different experiences, and we listened to the customers. Typically riding a touring pace crossing takes about 2 months. We have a 50 day and a 52 day. So you figure you'll want to do it in a few months. And again, listening to our cyclists, our customers, over the years, there were some cyclists that said, boy, I'd like an adventure like this, but I can't come out in 2 months. Do you have something that might be a month, 4 weeks? So again, back to the kind of the research library, and we begin to put together short of experiences. We do a West Coast trip from Astoria, Oregon, down to Southern California, Newport Beach, and that's just a little over 3 weeks. We do an East Coast ride from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, down to Jacksonville, Florida. So we go down the East Coast. One of my favorite experiences, the Great Mississippi River Ride, that we follow. Now we go up the river from New Orleans to Minneapolis. When we started it, we actually went down the river, and we changed it a little bit for logistical ease. So we offer some shorter experiences. And then in keeping with that tune, listening to our customers, there were some cyclists that 80 miles a day wasn't enough mileage. They would get in at noon, and they weren't into doing as much sightseeing around town. They wanted to ride a little more mileage, and we came up with a series of events that we call the Fast America Series, where we're riding closer to 110 miles a day, and it cuts the time frame in half, so that instead of 2 months, we do it in a month. And we have two of those rides. One goes from L.A. to Boston, similar to the event that we started doing this year ago, and the other event goes from L.A., well, Southern California, to Savannah, Georgia. So we have kind of a Southern crossing. Southern crossing takes about 27 days. The one from L.A. to Boston is 32, so just a little bit over a month.
So I have a question about people who have not done a cross-country tour, and I may know the answer to this because I've seen people talk to people who have done this who may not be 100% ready day one, but somehow they seem to get into the groove, and by this third or fourth or even fifth day, they're ready to do those kinds of miles. How does that happen?
Well, obviously the goal, you know, it starts with kind of being bitten by that bug that you want to ride across the country. And there is an appropriate amount of training. I mean, we tell people to get in a core amount of mileage. But, you know, when you actually get out on the road, if you've gotten a reasonable amount of mileage in, once we get out on the road, though, and get started, it's amazing that, I don't want to say the road puts you into the shape, but, you know, with a group of cyclists and you start off every day and you begin cycling and you get a day or two under your belt, and it becomes less about how many miles are we doing today and more where are we going? What are we going to see? Mountain passes and cute little western towns and, you know, crossing the farm belt. It's the experience kind of takes over, and not that it becomes less about the cycling, but less can I do it and more what are we going to see and what are we going to experience today? And that really takes over.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Let me remind our listeners again, we're speaking with Doug Tarosian. He is the founder of America by Bicycle. It is a really well-established organization. We're going to take a real short break, and when we come back, we'll talk with Doug some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. We're talking with Doug Tarosian. He is the founder of America by Bicycle, and I'm going to say longer distance touring organization. You can pick and choose when we'll talk about his website a little bit later in our conversation. Let me talk a little bit about your fully supported aspect of the tours, and that is, who's on the road with you? Do you use tour leaders or GPS? I mean, things have changed a lot since you started your business.
Well, boy, they sure have. part of the experience of fully supported, what does fully supported mean? And I go back to providing all the logistics. So as you, the cyclist, the person who's going to be riding those miles, you just focus on the experience, on the riding, and every day where we're going and what we're going to see. And again, providing good overnight accommodation, providing good food, breakfast and dinner every day. The route, which is paramount, having a nice cycling route to ride on that's safe, that's as much back roads as you can and get on, you know, nice cycling roads. the full support so that you see our staff. We do have a support team that really works the trips. And the number of staff depends on the number of clients. It's typically one support staff member for every 6 to 8 cyclists. Typically, in a group of maybe 25 cyclists, there'll be 5 or 6 support staff. We have big 15-passenger vans, and they're they're painted up with our logos and company name and things, so they're very visible. We set up sag stops. We also sweep the route so that you're riding along, you have a flat or you have a problem, it's very likely that you'll see our equipment or the words passed down. We have radios and cell phones, and you're right, things are so different here in 2020 than they were in 1995, 94 when we started doing it. The technology has helped with communication, and indeed we do use GPS. We actually have 2 sheets, but we have downloads that you can download into your cell phone app or your handheld GPS that goes on the bike, and you can follow our routes that way. But mechanical support, carry your full-size luggage, is all the logistics and things you would think about if you were planning to do this on your own. And there's a fair amount of people that do it, that go self-contained and do it by themselves. It's a little nicer going with a group between the camaraderie and an organization like ours that provides all that logistical support so that if you have a problem, you're not alone. There's a group of people, there's an organization that's going to help you out, keep you rolling, allow you to be able to get in every day and achieve that, day by day part of the experience so that you can ride what we call the EFI club, which is every fantastic inch. And that's the goal of almost all the cyclists, is to ride every mile of the crossing.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that more than once. So I have a question about something else that's relatively new, and that's e-bikes. People are bringing their own bikes on these tours, I assume, so you don't have a rental fleet. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. Are you seeing people bringing e-bikes?
We haven't yet. We've been really discussing this. This is something that we want to, allow. And I think we're going to try it. This is the first year. I think we have one that's coming on our San Francisco trip, and we're going to see how it works.
Well, I know what the one issue might be, because I was on a trip in November assisting, and the problem is battery life is not going to be a full day. So, if you're doing 80, 90 miles a day, somebody's going to either have to carry a spare battery or have SAG come up with it. So that may be one of the issues to look at, I guess. The other question I have is, what's the average age of your guests?
The average age is probably just under 50 years old.
Nice.
We see more people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, actually. And the biggest reason, really, to be able to take time off from your job for 2 months.
Right.
People that are a little older, either retired or have a little more time built up, as well as is tend to have a little more money to be able to fund the experience than younger people. So we see a little more of a, I don't want to call it an older population, but people at that point in their life where they have time and funding to do these kinds of trips.
And do you see a good, I think I saw on your website that you have a really good repeat customer.
We do. It's just under 40% in terms of return riders that will come back and do another trip. And gosh, we've got a number of cyclists that have literally done every long distance trip we do. We do a few foliage rides at the end of the season. I mean, we're in New England, and you can't help but want to go out and ride when the leaves are changing. So we have 2 experiences: 1 to 5 day, 1 to 7 day. They're much shorter mileage. I think the 5 day is 33 miles a day, and the 7 day is about 35. And it's actually a great way, if someone's thinking about coming out and doing one of the longer trips, to get to know us, how the organization works, and to go out there for 5 days or a week, just to see what it's like if they haven't done any touring, to see what a multi-day tour is like, to see, hey, is this really something that I like? Do I like this system? And maybe I'll do something a little longer.
The last thing I want to talk about, which I think is very important, it's a big part of your organization. And if we look back to the beginning with when your dad was with the LAW, is your charity function. How does it work if you want to ride for a charity? You have a way to do that.
Yeah, we do. And because we started in the nonprofit kind of business, if you will, it's always been something that's been close to our heart. That when I started the commercial company, I thought we need to find a way to keep this a viable option, because there's so many people that really want to support a charity and use the event to do that, to raise the money and to support the charity. And it's pretty simple. We don't get involved with the charity side, but we will support you in that endeavor. And pretty much how it works is you pick a favorite charity, a charity you want to support. And there are numbers you need to raise. For example, you're typically trying to raise about 3 times what the cost of the trip is. That way, if you achieve your goal, the trip gets paid out of the amount that you raise. You meet with the charity, explain who you are, what you're going to do, going to ride your bicycle across the country. You want to support them. Will they help you? Will they accept the money, knowing that a percentage pays for, you know, your participation? 90% of the time, they're on board and they'll help you out.
Do you have any idea of the amounts of money that have been raised for charity through your trips?
Well, we don't keep a total, but it's well into the millions.
Wow.
Over the years.
Sure, sure. Wow, such an interesting way of doing cross country. I really like it. I like the way you started and how you've kept certain things going. How about advocacy? Is there anything that you do that still supports advocacy, other than, of course, you're taking people on the road? That's that unto itself is an advocacy kind of experience.
Well, absolutely. Proving that the bicycle is a vehicle that you can ride really every day, whether it's commuting, you know, as a viable transportation alternative is one of the biggest things. You know, we're still involved with a couple different national groups, including the LAB now, which is the League of American Bicyclists, through donations, and there's some work that we do together. So we try to keep our ear to the advocacy side, but we're not involved like we were in the early years.
Lastly, and most importantly, tell our listeners how they can find out more about your organization and about maybe signing up for a trip.
Well, I would I direct you to our website, which is AmericaByBicycle.com, where you can see all the events that we host, the support, the pricing. There's wonderful information. The links at the bottom of the page will connect you to journals that cyclists have written, so you can see what actual cyclists have experienced from day to day and give you a real taste of what the experience is like.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. I think if people are starting to plan a vacation, I imagine that a lot of your trips are already filling up.
We are, but we do have some spaces available still for 2020 for our crossings, our San Francisco to New Hampshire and our Oregon to New Hampshire trip as well.
Very good. Well, America by Bicycle, we've been talking with its founder, Doug Tarosian. I wish you lots of luck with this year's rides, and thank you again so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me on today.
Bye-bye. My thanks to Doug Tarosian for being my guest this week. If you are interested in learning more about America by Bicycle, log on to AmericaByBicycle.com. It's all there. Thanks also to Aaron Weiss and Don Walker. As promised, here are some of the results of last week's question, which was, do you have a mileage goal for 2020? Holy crap, you people ride a lot of miles. From answers like, well, I just want to get to the end of the year, to 7,000 miles and more, and every conceivable distance in between, I was shocked to know how many committed people are reaching such amazing goals. One listener who lives in Iowa and actually doesn't even have a Facebook page, but is an avid fan, sent an email to explain his routine of riding several times a day, right before meals, just as Dr. Gabe Merkin describes, for a healthy and long life. Thanks to all of you who participated. So, question for this week? It's a little bit different, but I'm really interested to know your answers. Who are your favorite type of interview guests for the show? Leave us your comments on our Facebook page. You can also send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without the E, or go to outspokencyclist.com and leave a comment on your favorite episode. Thank you for listening. Remember that WJCU's Radiothon begins next Friday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Have a great week. Stay safe. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.